Moncrief on News Talk.
I look so different in all of my pictures. Like, you wouldn't even think that is the same person in just them three things. Ugly. Absolute ugly.
Are you genuinely serious about that?
Ugly. There's not one bit of...
Because you don't mind me saying, you do look completely different.
Well, I did. I had my face done 10 days ago. Again.
Really?
No, like, when people say you were so pretty, beautiful, I look at that and think, Kate, would you look at them and think pretty? No, I wouldn't.
Are
even
you
though it's, no, there's not one. I will find a photo where I think I look pretty, I'm sure.
That was Katie Price, Nothing to Hide. You can stream from Wednesday on Sky TV and Now TV. James Dempsey joins us once again. Afternoon, James.
Afternoon.
As I was asking before we came on air, there have been other Katie Price documentaries, I assume.
I can't list them off the top of my head, but I cannot but imagine there have been many Katie Price documentaries. So I suppose the question is there anything else to be revealed, quote unquote? And this I found absolutely thoroughly fascinating. The thing I would compare it most to, and I actually went to check if it's still available, and it doesn't seem to be on the Channel 4 website, is a few years ago there was a documentary about Jade Goody that I thought was absolutely brilliant, about how Jade Goody was this reality star who changed Britain. And if you think of the timeline of Jade Goody and, you know, Jordan / Katie Price, they are aligned for, you know, a while anyway. So this falls into that kind of category, looking at someone who began her career as a glamour model in the 90s on Page Three. Even just looking at the footage of Page Three is so bizarre. In this day and age, you just think, oh, right, okay, there was just, you know, there they were on Page Three, right? For decades. Anyway, whatever. Who began her career as that and then has been part of a constant part of reinvention of the same thing, right? As in, you know, I don't want to diminish any of Katie Price's achievements, of which there are many. She is a very successful person at controlling her image, but basically her image is her entire career, right?
As in,
it's not like she spun off into pop music or acting. I mean, she has acted in things and she's released music, but they haven't been the financial go-getters that they, you know, was perhaps planned. What has sold for Jordan, for Katie Price, is her body. And it is a really fascinating documentary to watch this woman who is like vaping like a chimney throughout the whole thing, talking about the control of her image and the power that she feels in her image. As in, she goes to great lengths to explain that, you know, even though they're bringing in her mother and her brother as sort of talking heads into this, and what did they maybe think about when she was bearing all on Page Three, she was saying that, you know, I had this power, I felt sexy, I was able to look sexy, but people could not touch me. I was able to control my image thoroughly. Then they bring in her various lovers and boyfriends and husbands along the way. I mean, in the first episode, which is, I have to admit, the only one that was released for pre-screening, so this is all based on one episode alone, but it's a really good opening episode. You get a lot with Dane Bowers, who was in the pop band Another Level, and with whom she had this long running romance, and she describes him as like the love of her life, and then you kind of see him and you're like, this guy. And the whole thing about like Katie Price is she's a really good raconteur, right? Like,
right,
she's funny and kind of just quick-witted and completely and utterly self-deprecating, and at times very profound, which, like, people probably say I'm talking absolute nonsense, but there were times where she was talking about herself, who she was, the various things she had gone through as a young person, and then as a empowered 18, 19 year old suddenly taking control of her own image. The relationship she had with the glamour photographer, who also is a woman, Jeannie Savage, Jeannie effing Savage, as she's known in the industry. The relationship she had with her in control of her image, how she would try to, you know, use the press as a way to build up the iconography around Jordan, around Katie Price. I found this first episode absolutely fascinating. Now, it is the first of four, right? And four episodes is a lot to dedicate in any kind of documentary. But I guess there are so many phases, and what I would also say, faces of Katie Price, because this is someone who is absolutely and utterly transparent about the cosmetic surgeries that she has undergone. And while
I think she could hardly keep it a secret,
but that's actually the point she makes, yeah. Right? Like, yes, she agrees. Like, when talking about her first breast augmentation, she's saying she didn't want them to look natural because what was the point? Everyone knew that they weren't, so she might as well, you know, look how she's trying to look. And while it is not germane normally to comment on women's appearances on national media, like, this I think is slightly different because, you know, that's the whole point of her identity, is that she has crafted it and shaped it under the knife into what she wants it to be. But like, she looks nowadays like this almost like cartoon character in terms of her proportions and everything about her, like absolutely porcelain white teeth. Everything about her is sort of false, and yet it is completely curated to the falseness that she wants it to be. Right. Which, you know, this is my YouTube essay. Right. But all in, I just found this to be an utterly fascinating look at that period of time and then what it takes to hold on to that level of fame. Now, is Jordan Katie Price as famous as she was in the 90s? In 2026, probably not, I would have said, until, you know, a couple of months ago she married this new guy, and then that has kickstarted this whole press cycle about this guy she met in Dubai. Was he kidnapped? Was it a hair transplant? Who will know?
Yeah.
I don't know if the documentary will catch up right to that, because that is very, very, very recent. But this is someone who understands how to own the headline and has been doing that for 30 years. Can she do that for another 30? Well, that remains to be seen.
Yeah, and is there a narrative line through the these four episodes? Well, are they telling her entire story, kind of thing?
The idea is to tell the story of her 30-year career. So this first episode is sort of literally just becoming Jordan, as in who she was, her relationship with her parents, her relationship with her stepfather and her brother, how she grew up in Brighton, always thinking, you know, being this very mild-mannered, meek child until overnight she was a teenage terror who just was like, I'm going to be famous. I want to be a model. Realizing she was too short to be a fashion model. So the next best thing was glamour modeling.
Yeah.
And then the beginning of the origins of Jordan. And it's actually so fascinating to watch all of the like tabloid newspaper footage. I mean, they actually bring her first appearance on Page Three. They bring that copy of the newspaper to her mother, her brother, her stepfather, and they all sort of it's kind of bizarre, to be honest, right? Look, who know, right, whatever, right? I just don't know if I'd want my brother opening me on Page Three, but that's not a situation I'm ever going to find myself in. But anyway, it's so interesting to watch not only the footage of Katie Price, but then the other articles that are also on the page that just like are this little snapshot of what else, you know, what life was like in the 90s in this weird sex time. Like, is it attitudes, this prurient yet also like not time.
Yeah.
Like, it's just so interesting to watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Someone says, tell James there's a place in heaven for him enduring the shite. The sad part is that there are people out there who enjoy this muck. Give me watermelons any day. That's a reference to the previous item we were doing. That's something you can see on TikTok. Apparently, it's absolutely fascinating. Right. Okay. Our next show is Elle. You can stream the entire first season now on Amazon Prime Video. Here's a clip.
I'm faking my own death. Look how dead I look.
That's too bad. I had a gift for you, but I guess I'll have to give it to someone who's alive.
Does it rhyme with Versace?
Even better.
Oh my god!
Is he mine?
He's yours.
Wait. Did you adopt? Or did you shop?
The spelling's just redecorated and earth tones don't match their new color palette, so I rescued this little blondie from them.
Oh.
Just based on the audio, I hate everyone in the show. So it's the prequel to Legally Blonde?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So, yeah. Here's the thing. There are the bones of an actually very good show in this.
Okay.
But the whole concept of it doesn't make any sense to me. Simply because Legally Blonde is a 25-year-old comedy that I think people mostly remember fondly. There was an immediate sequel that actually was released even the year before Elle Woods graduated from Harvard Law School, but whatever, right? And then there was also another spin-off, and then an attempt, well, allegedly a third film in the offing, but I don't think a script is written yet, and certainly no filming has begun, right? So this is a prequel to that. Now, the audience of a movie that was popular, let's say, with millennials 25 years ago are now approaching middle age. Mm. So why would they want to watch a prequel about, you know, a period comedy set in the 90s, you know, that's ostensibly a teen comedy? Because this is about Elle Woods, the, you know, high schooler, right? So the that concept made no sense to me until I remembered that there's also Legally Blonde the musical, which is this like perennial kind of high school slash transition year performed musical that has been going on for, let's say, 20 years rather than 25. So there probably is enough of a residual audience that Amazon is interested in trying to again eke more into its teenage slash people who enjoy media for teenagers market, of which it is, you know, excelling at. I mean, The Summer I Turned Pretty is the most boring show on television, but very, very popular. And they have tried to repeat that over and over again. So here they take the Elle Woods character that you will know from, you know, she got in, got into Harvard, was Legally Blonde, etc., etc., right? And I actually watched the entire show, and then I rewatched Legally Blonde immediately after it, just to get a sense of what we're going on here. There is the bones of a good show here because they have a really good idea. Legally Blonde is about, obviously, a fish out of water. She's this kind of ditzy blonde, but actually she's very bright. She gets into Harvard Law School to win back her estranged lover, right? But everyone in the law school is hoity-toity, and she is, you know, a bit of a blonde bimbo, right? And they want to recapture that fish out of water style thing here. So the way they do it in the mechanic of the show, I actually thought was very clever, because it's set in 1995. So they relocate Elle from Bel Air, where her father has done a botched nose job, to Seattle. And she finds herself in the grunge scene in the local high school. And of course, she's this like perky pink.
And is she still in high school at this point?
Yes, because she's only in her first year of high school, because, I mean, they want this to go for 4 seasons.
All right, so we can infer at some point she moves back to Bel Air so she can continue that timeline. This is like Marvel stuff here.
I'm not sure which universe we're in, but in this one, that's what happens, right? So that as a mechanic for like kind of having a repetition of the fish out of water wetness to the show, I think works really, really well.
Yeah.
Because you have this like perky pink Romy and Michelle-esque girl walking around a bunch of Nirvana t-shirt wearing, you know, grunge types in Seattle, where it's raining and grey and miserable. That, I thought, actually worked incredibly well. And Lexi Minitree, who plays Elle Woods, she got the part by recreating the kind of very famous scene from the movie in which Elle applies for law school by doing this video essay. She basically recreated that. She is a very good comedic actress. She has the entire show basically rests on her shoulders as this lovable, ditzy character who's also very clever. That's a very, you know, that's a lot of things to be juggling at once. But she's very funny. She's a great physical comedian, and she really sells it. The problem is everything else going on in the show, right? So the mechanic, I think, works. The family is a fish out of water in Seattle. That all works. She's a brilliant lead. June Diane Raphael as her mother, excellent. But the rest of it is like not the 90s at all. Everyone else is walking around, you know, they don't play enough into the 90s enough, because I actually think its audience wouldn't be able to get its 90s references because they weren't alive in the 90s, so they just wouldn't understand them. Then it becomes this prolonged high school mystery about why the school secretary gets fired. And, you know, there are lines about, well, Elle, you're not a lawyer, and they're laying it on very thick, but there's sort of a quote unquote problem to be resolved through which Elle uses her perky legal brain, even though it's not yet legal, but it's, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I have to admit, there are parts of it where I laughed out loud. I thought it was quite funny. And then it began to drag and drag and drag and drag and drag and drag and drag some more. And I lost the will to live. So then I rewatched Legally Blonde after it. And actually, I don't think that holds up that much either.
Yes.
So maybe it's not just for me. But all in, I think that there's promise here, but this first season just didn't get it quite right.
Okay. And it's not quite clear who it's aimed at.
Yeah, because exactly who is the audience for this, right? As in, Amazon has this, you know, coterie of teenage soaps that not only teenagers watch, clearly. I mean, it's not like teenagers are paying the subscription to Amazon anyway, right? But they're popular with adults, young adults, middle-aged adults, whatever. But Amazon has put a lot of investment into this, like, very young, late teens, early 20s, romantic demographic. Is there a love triangle in this? Of course. Is there, like, bizarrely cool with a queer representation in this, even though it's set in 1995? You betcha, right? It's just, it's trying to have its cake and eat it too.
Yes, of course.
In terms of everything. But when it is good, and there are at least a handful of moments in every episode where it is really funny, they just hit the nail on the head right.
Yeah.
Because I kind of get the sense that Legally Blonde still has legs, that even though it's 25 years ago, that you know, teenagers still watch
it. Well, maybe.
It's something.
But I will say Reese Witherspoon is directly involved in this. She doesn't appear in it, but she is a producer. She has been involved in the promotional material. She was involved in the casting, etc., etc.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, she's like a mogul now
That's
at this
true.
Point. Yeah. Right, our third show is X-Men 97. You can stream new episodes of Season 2 every Wednesday on Disney+. Here's a clip.
Fools! Who are you to stand against that which is eternal?
In our time, we're called the X-Men.
Arctic winds freeze their icy hearts.
Right, okay, we get the gist of that. This is not a thoughtful drama where no one expresses that. This is animated, though,
isn't it? This is animated. So X-Men, the animated series, ran for like 74 episodes, I think, in the 90s. And I remember watching that as a child and absolutely loving it. And that was my introduction, really, to the entire Marvel universe. Little did I know that it would come to, like, dominate all of our viewing about 20 years later for a good 10 years.
Mm.
And this was an idea from a creator named Beau DeMayo, who was working with Marvel and decided to pitch an idea to reboot this original animated series that ran for 5 seasons in the 90s. And the idea was simply to make a direct sequel, as in it had 5 seasons, let's just make season 6 of it, but call it X-Men 97. So again, I mean, much like Elle, this is a period piece because it is set in the 90s. But this is obviously an X-Men cartoon, so it stars the roster of X-Men characters you would know from the movies, but know better from the comics and animated show if you had watched that. So who we heard in the clip there were Cyclops and Jean Grey was there, Storm, etc. Now the first season came along and it was hugely successful both critically and with audiences, despite a lot of kind of turmoil behind the scenes, because Beau DeMayo was fired from the production pretty much before the first episode aired or was streamed, and despite the fact that he had already written the scripts for season 2. So he is still credited here with a huge involvement in it, but has gone a little bit rogue. That's not an X-Men joke, but I'll put it in there. Has gone rogue with his own description of his deteriorating relationship with Marvel slash his own thirsty photographs online.
Yes.
Anyway, put those. Don't Google it. Is all I'm going to say. So, all in, this is a really well-made idea, right? This is like this understands exactly what it is. This is a show that wants to capture the sense of nostalgia that people of my generation have for a show that they loved as children, while not necessarily making it as bloody and violent as like Invincible is on Amazon, let's say. Like this is not per se adult animation, but it's definitely kind of like 12s animation,
yeah.
Right? Like,
okay.
They have upped the stakes, they've upped the scale, they've upped the sexiness of the show, they've upped everything while still making it vaguely family friendly. Now, the major advantage a show like this has over, you know, I was talking about Avatar last week and how like they've made such a shambles of that adaptation is, here, it's not an adaptation, it's a continuation of what already existed. So, do you need to have seen the 74 episodes of the animated show before you go in? Probably not, but are you the kind of person who's just going to start an X-Men cartoon if you hadn't already seen that? I don't think so either. And the other major advantage that they have is they have decades of comics material to build on, right? I mean, all of these stories have already been told in some shape or another, either in an animated show or on the pages of a comic book. And the advantage the writers have here is they know the ones that were popular
yeah.
with the readers, so they can just pick and choose which stories they want to tell. So where do we find ourselves in this timeline? The X-Men have been split up about 5,000 years apart. One group of them are in ancient Egypt. Another group are
wow, that's far longer than 74 episodes, I would have thought.
Another group are in a future dystopia on the same planet against their most fiendish enemy of all, Apocalypse. Is this going to convert anybody who's not already, you know, drinking the X-Men Kool-Aid? No, I don't think so. But if you have, I think this is a very refreshing reintroduction to that world.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Right. Those three shows are Katie Price, Nothing to Hide. You can stream from Wednesday on Sky and Now TV. Elle, you can stream the entire first season now on Amazon Prime Video. And X-Men 97, you can stream new episodes of Season 2 every Wednesday on Disney+. James Dempsey, thanks a million.
Thank you.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.